of psychology and pop culture had a baby, they'd call it Shrink Tank.
A new paper reveals more intelligent people are quicker to learn and unlearn.
90% chance that there's some like weird animal out there.
Yeah. Howard Stern's been doing this forever. And far more extreme.
From Nashville and Charlotte, this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Welcome, welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville, and we've got a great show for you. Our trending topic today is Santa is fake news. It's about parents lying to their kids over the holidays and some of the other fun and funny holiday traditions. That's in our second segment. But first, let's meet our Charlotte panel. Dr. Emma Kate Wright is here. Hello, Emma Kate.
Hi, Dave.
Any news for you?
Not really. I'm just feeling very amped up. I've got a lot of energy today. I've been kind of all over the place. It's the holiday season, and there's lots of decorations, and I like hot chocolate, and I'm feeling good. Feeling good.
And that's the only reason you're hopped up? It's not like, there's no other reason?
No.
Mm-mm. Like cocaine?
No. No. No, I just get excited. Right now we're doing our secret friends gift exchange. I got a Rudolph nose and it just made me happy. So I'm just in a good mood. Good mood.
All right. And Dr. Frank Gaskell is with us. Frank, do you have a secret friend?
I do. I call it my secret Santa.
Uh-huh.
And
because you say Merry Christmas. People don't say Merry Christmas these days, but you do.
I know. I'm making America Christmas again. But I'm getting Rick and Morty stuff. And today, Pickle Rick led me all the way across my office. And I opened up a little cabinet and I had a jar of pickles, which I then ate.
Yeah, that's what you do with pickles.
Yeah.
You know,
let's hope so.
Wow.
Hope so.
All righty. No one knows what to say to that.
Speaking of Rick and Morty, I have a pop figure of a Rick and Morty character, and I think we've said it on the podcast before. I don't know if it's appropriate, but the character is named Mr. Poopy Butthole.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I have Snowball, Mr. Poopy Butthole, and Rick, and I have a stuffed Morty.
So for those who don't know, this television show is it's a cartoon, but it is highly adult in nature.
Yes.
Highly
Mr.
adult.
Poopy Butthole and a stuffed Rick. I think you need to have a pause in between.
All right. And you just heard him. Jonathan Hederle is here. He's our certified Asian who rounds out the panel. And Jonathan, do you have any news personally going on?
No news. My secret Santa friend, elf, whatever you want to call them, has not struck yet. So
because you're a bad person.
I am. I'm waiting for coal. I'm waiting for brown rice. That's what bad Asians get.
Now, Frank, are you doing the thing that you do every year where you give your secret friend like just stuff out of your desk, just trash and nonsense and things like that?
Let's go with yes and no on that.
All right.
I'm doing some diversionary tactics.
Oh yeah. When is the secret friend in Charlotte revealed? Is it next week or the week after?
December 15th, Star Wars.
Oh, okay.
Now, you know, Frank's trash is like a $20 bill that's been like crumpled.
Oh, right.
So, you know, to get Frank's trash is
like Asian
highbrow.
Duck sauce from takeout.
I know it. Yeah, it's usually soy sauce packets.
Yeah.
That's usually
well,
like
you
that.
Nailed it. It's actually, I use duck sauce.
Yeah.
Good call.
That's it. All right. Well, each week, Jonathan follows stories of psychology and pop culture in our first segment that we call
Being Human.
So much is going on in the news around sexual assault, and a new study published in the Journal of Interpersonal Violence found that men tended to confuse sexual interest with sexual consent. And this level of confusion around sexual consent varied depending on factors such as how far along people were in sexual interaction, or if the pair had had sex previously, or how much men believed in myths around rape, including women generally find being physically forced into sex a turn-on, or when women say no, they really mean yes. So, Frank, what is it about men inflating their own sexual desirability?
Well, Hederle, I found this an interesting article, and I think it speaks to how unconscious people's motives are, how they're just driven by all this other information that they're not consciously aware of. And there was a great sentence in the article that said, basically, men need to be taught, or guys need to be taught, that consent involves unambiguous affirmative communication rather than the absence of refusal. And I thought that sort of nailed what this article is saying, is that just because somebody is wearing a certain kind of clothing or has a certain past of sexual behavior or who has had some alcohol does not mean consent. And the other part of it that I thought was really important is that people want to say rape or sexual predators are these monsters, but it's really these women are being affected by people they know, and it's not really about psychopathy. It's about men forcing themselves on women, and that they're not conscious to a certain extent of the reasons behind that.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying there, Frank, just in terms of we do need to make sure that we're properly educating men on consent and our boys on consent. But it's more than just that, too. I mean, I think we have to think about societal norms that we see where, for example, women are supposed to be pure and we need men to help us and to do these things. But now, you know, there has been a shift in terms of women working more and women being more independent. So and again, it's, you know, where do you start? You know, we're in the process right now of I think we've spoken about this before. We've had this watershed moment. And the hope is that we can start to create more of a dialogue and figure out what steps do we need to take to try and fix this problem.
And Dave, I will tell you, I saw an article today one of my colleagues gave to me, and it's so true. The title of the article is "Nobody Wants to See Your Fill in the Blank."
Right. And why'd you
nobody
say,
does?
Why'd you say
nobody.
Dave first before you said that?
Because I've shared this information with Emma Caton Hederly.
But, okay.
Or because, you know, reasons.
Oh, boy.
Dave, nobody wants to see your Dave.
Your business.
But, it's true.
Yeah. I mean, when that kind of thing's going on, that's a different dynamic. I think part of what we're saying, too, is that there are multiple dynamics happening with this. There are people
yes.
like Weinstein and maybe Louis C.K. and others that would expose themselves and force women to watch them as that's kind of a pathology that's happening
yes.
there. And then there's another kind of grouping of people that are maybe in a relationship or at the beginning of a relationship where the men are committing sexual violations because of how they think about it that's distorted or wrong or unhealthy. And those are kind of different things dynamically. One's an education issue. One's a therapeutic or law enforcement issue, right?
Right.
So do you guys think that this movement that's happened since the Weinstein story broke and all that, I've been keeping a running tab of all the well-known people that have been implicated in this, and it's about four dozen at this point. It's a huge list. Do you think this is going to have long-lasting effects, or do you think this is going to have its moment, and then we're going to go back to the way things were 6 months, a year from now?
I think it's going to be long-lasting because, I mean, it's a movement, and I don't think women are going to allow that to die down or the men who support them.
Emma Kate, what's your thought?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. It's long term. I think people are pissed, and that anger is warranted, and it's also a good catalyst for action at this point. So hopefully we can have a positive movement forward on it.
You know, I think the fact that it started with Hollywood entertainment, but it's transcended into news and media and other areas, I think that's going to give it some of the staying power that it's not just Hollywood, because in and of itself, that is a infrastructure or an industry that has a lot of problems, that they tend to self-police themselves. But if you go into these other areas, media, journalism, then it becomes a larger phenomenon that's going to see other areas kind of change. But I also feel like until more and more women are put in positions of authority and power and leadership, that it does carry the risk of slowly creeping back in.
Well, here's the thing I don't know how to make sense of. I think I understand it. But you've got these two things happening at once right now, that you've got this movement where the obvious message is believe women, right? It's like, don't dismiss women's concerns, complaints, believe them. And at the same time, we've got this Senate candidate who is basically saying, first of all, there was kind of a spin about, well, you know, it's not as bad as it seems. And now it's like, well, it's all a lie. Don't believe them. And, you know, and both those things are happening kind of concurrently. How do you guys make sense of that? Because I think we're recording before that election in Alabama. I would bet money that guy is going to get elected.
Yes.
Yeah. I actually was kind of thinking about this just in terms of, I think, you know, somebody mentioned how Hollywood does the self-policing because there's a lot of issues there. And it is kind of fascinating when you think about how there's just been this huge backlash for, you know, all the information that's coming out in Hollywood. But then politically, you know, there are more congressmen that have, you know, committed sexual assaults in bathrooms than, you know, transsexual people. And, you know, it's like there's this rampant culture within politics that stems on, you know, it's centered on power. And, you know, I think about how senators vote on their own income. And so it's like they're the ones that have all of this control in terms of the legality and issues. And it's just this toxic place where people are constantly trying to get ahead. And so I think it's going to be harder to make the change there until there's enough people. And right now, I think we've got this forward movement and progression that we have to keep going so that they can't not listen to us. Like, I think of Anthony Weiner and how just his name, of course. But, you know, he got, you know, he wasn't ousted until, you know, news came out about him being, you know, in a sexual situation with minor. And so it blows my mind that we're having such a movement in one area of our culture, but then we're not, like, it feels like we're just hitting a wall with some of these politicians.
Well, what's interesting about that to me is it feels like in more liberal communities that it's being taken seriously and there are repercussions. And so that's part of what, you know, Hollywood's an interesting community because you've got actors and public figures that are very liberal, but you've also got producers and people with money who tend to be very conservative. So it's a mixed community in that respect. But the public face of it's much more liberal. What's really fascinating with me with the politics piece of it is you've got people like John Conyers, who now is going to step down, right, retire. As we're recording this, there's Democratic senators who are putting pressure on Al Franken to step down, which he very well may, and within his own party. And at the same time, you've got Trump, who's just denying. You've got Roy Moore, who's just denying, and it's totally working for him. So it's this kind of two narratives. It's like on one side, we're trying to take responsibility. We're trying to make this thing right. And on this other side, our MO is, you know, we're just going to deny it and it'll work for us. And both sides are culpable in terms of the action. It's more about the response.
I think that just speaks to Trump's base. It's white, middle, lower class, poorly educated, fearful, conservative people, and it's about power. It's more of the same. I think it doesn't necessarily speak to Republican or Democrat. I just think it speaks to power and playing to a base.
Well, and I think there's a lot of you know, self-serving biases that we're all culpable, you know, and vulnerable too. So, you know, the old adage, everybody's a liberal until you become rich and then you become a fiscal conservative. It's the challenge of moral and character development is to follow through on your belief system when it actually puts you in a hard situation or a moral dilemma. So the idea of folks down in Alabama that find certain behaviors abhorrent, but then when it comes to voting and it can have implications on politics and policies, that then they start to waver on that value and resolve. So, but at the same time, like, you know, there's nothing about Al Franken's situation to where, you know, I don't know why it's taken the Democrats so long to call for his resignation. I don't know why he hasn't yet. So, I mean, like you said, both sides, it's easy to pile on the Republicans because there's so much blatant, like, tomfoolery or just, like, gaps of logic. But, you know, Hollywood, a lot of these people that have come out to be predators, they hid behind their liberal and feminist credentials, and they've used that to exploit demographics that they've championed and given money to and organized causes. And I mean, I just find that abhorrent.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's definitely hypocrisy in different forms on both sides, for sure. Well, it's a topic we'll continue to talk about because it feels like it's got some definite legs on this story. All right. Well, let's shift gears, and we're going to talk about our trending topic today, which is Santa is fake news. And this is about parents lying during the holidays, whether that's a good thing, a bad thing, why they do it, whether you should do it, all that kind of stuff. So any of you guys have a favorite, not necessarily a lying story, but a favorite holiday story or memory that comes up? Frank?
I've got a great one. This was 5 years ago, maybe longer. And I convinced my two children that there was a squirrel in our tree, and we would feed it and look for it and try and find it. And the day we took the tree down, I dragged the tree out the front door and threw it in the yard, and my kids saw it. And just by chance, I threw it near a squirrel. The squirrel got scared and ran from the tree, and they're all going, "There it is, it's free." And we still talk about that squirrel.
How about you guys?
Oh, I have many Christmas stories, Dave, as we're all familiar with. What, you know, obviously the two that stand out the most is it actually wasn't Hederly's, it was my mom's side of the family, the McCulloughs. The McCullough family tradition was to go out to my grandmother's house, and after we would open up presents, aunts, uncles, we would congregate. And then for about 3 or 4 years in a row, one of my uncles would proceed to down a bottle of Jack Daniels or some type of American whiskey and then head into the back room with my uncle who was a dentist. And that dentist uncle would perform a vasectomy on the other uncle. Then that uncle would proceed to lay on the living room sofa for the rest of Christmas Day.
And you swear this is all 100% true.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable.
That the dentist uncle performed.
The dentist uncle. Uh-huh. And then, obviously, the creme de la creme, which I wrote about both on Shrink Tank and in our Hero House book, Mick Shrinks, was the time in sixth grade my father and my stepmother decided to take my siblings and I was the youngest in the sixth grade, to a nudist hot springs in Oregon on Christmas Day. And for those of you that might have grown up on teen sex comedies or soft core porn, soft core, like erotica, real life thing is nothing like they depict in film. The average age was about, at the time, 40 years older than me.
Ew.
So, and I think I titled the article in the chapter, Santa's the Only One with Brand New Bags.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
Ew.
Yeah, mine was like way more, like, magical.
Well, that's why you're bouncing around and you're like, I'm so happy and I'm wearing a Rudolph nose.
I know. I have like really happy childhood memories from Christmas time, where probably one of my favorite stories was when my cousin Kate, she and I were, so I'm Emma Kate and Kate, we were quite the duo when we were little. We were very excited. It's Christmas Eve. We're waiting for Santa. And we would always spend Christmas Eve at my grandmother's house. And mind you, my grandmother had lots of beautiful old antique sorts of things, one of which was an antique bed. So we're very, very excited, and we decide, classic moment, we're going to jump on the bed and proceed to break the bed, where half of the bed, the foot of the bed is now much lower than it originally was, and my aunt comes flying into the room, and all she says is, I don't believe it, and we try to pretend like we're dead asleep, and we're so afraid because we're like, oh my God, Santa's going to find out. We're not going to get our presents. It's going to be cold now. And like, we made it all year and now we're not getting our gifts. But then we wake up Christmas morning and it was magic. So
that's a good story, Emma Kate. Really, I'd like you to tell it all over again from the beginning.
Sean, can you add don't like leave Christmas sounds
any of it
in the background?
Out. Okay. Like, I want every word.
We were listening
again
for reindeer because we thought we heard some.
She's still going. I know. She's still just still telling the story.
Here it comes. I think I told this story once before on the podcast a couple years ago, but my favorite Christmas memory was every year my dad would get a neighbor to have sleigh bells and bang around either on the roof or near the side of the house. And my dad would look outside and go, what? There's a big fat guy in a red suit out there. He's on our roof. What's going on? And then he would go into the closet and get a shotgun.
What?
And oh, we would all go, no, no, Daddy, don't. And then he'd go to the door and go, I'm going to get him. And that was a kind of a Christmas ritual that Daddy was going to shoot.
Don't
the,
kill that, Santa.
And Dave's dad would always invite the neighbor he liked the least to do this. And every year there would be an accidental shooting.
That's right. Awesome.
Oh, Lord.
So did all of you guys... So. The whole panel, we don't have any Jewish folks here. We don't have any people that were celebrating other holidays, but all of you celebrated Christmas. Did you believe in Santa growing up?
I did, briefly.
Until 25?
No, it was until the first grade. And I was like six. Well, we were moving to another country, Iran. And my parents were out. I had a babysitter, and I just started exploring the house. And I went into a guest room, looked under the bed, looked in the closet, and there were all these presents. And I thought, wow, I forgot I had all these toys. And I just started playing with them, thinking how great it was. And then my mom came home and said, great, those are your Christmas presents. Like, what?
Santa's not real.
And,
I wanted a daughter.
That was fun.
Oh, man. Yeah, I believed in Santa. I don't remember when I stopped believing, but I definitely ruined Santa for my stepsister because I was so used to, you know, being a child of divorce, having two Christmases, and the parents, they would communicate, I guess, about what gifts they were going to do. And when my dad was marrying my mom, my stepmom, Joan, I went over and had a slumber party in December with my soon-to-be now stepsister, Allison, and she was so excited asking me what are you going to ask for from Santa? I was like, oh, well, I'm asking for this from mom and dad. She's like, oh, okay, but what are you going to ask for from Santa? Now, mind you, she was in the fourth grade, and I'm a year older than her. And so I kept looking at her. I was like, well, there is no Santa. And she was like really quiet and just didn't say anything. I was like, you don't still believe, do you?
Oh, no.
And she was like, I don't know what to say right now. So I ruined Santa
for
her.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, good job.
It was bad. She always talks to me about that.
I was the youngest, so I think there wasn't other siblings that would get swept up in the enthusiasm of Santa Claus, but also being a child of divorce, having Christmases with my dad and Nancy, who were about as festive as roadkill. So that really kind of really dampened the sort of like this idea of some magical, mystical person that comes and just showers kids with toys and stuff. So
I think if I remember it right, I told my mother that Santa wasn't real. And then she said, you're right. I think I just like figured it out. I remember where we were, the room we were in, and I was probably about 9 or so, and I had pieced all these things together. And
of course you did.
Yeah, and I said, "Okay, Santa's not real, right?" And she goes, "You're right." It was very anticlimactic.
Well, Dave,
and you're not my mother, right?
Dave, I don't want to go against, you know, what you're saying here, but Santa actually is real.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Because let me just hear this out. So in order to deliver all the presents around the world, Santa can only spend 1/1000th of a second per house, okay? And it's a 170-mile zigzaggy journey. And in order to do that, he would have to go 7,800 times the speed of sound. Now, that seems impossible, right?
Huh.
But here's the thing. Santa's been around since the 1400s.
Huh.
This dude's 600 years old. Now, imagine you're this smart guy, and you invent stuff.
Sure.
He can rip a hole in the space-time continuum.
Hole ripping.
And so a month and a half for him is just minutes for us, which is why we all have to give him cookies, because he's eating for like 3 months. You got it? Now wait, here's the thing.
I'm sorry, I fell asleep.
To deliver all the presents, those presents, if you estimate 2 pounds per kid of presents, that's 660 million pounds. Well, how does he do that? Okay? He has created nanotechnology that the toys are being made as he delivers them. And you know how you create nanoparticles?
How?
Carbon. Chimneys. That's why it goes down the chimney, to get the carbon to make the presents.
Isn't it cool how Santa
gives rich white kids
more presents than
Santa
poor
monitors. Santa monitors all the kids to know who's good or bad. How does he do it?
How?
Massive supercomputers.
Computer.
Dave, where does Santa Claus live?
North Pole.
Why does he live there?
Supercomputers.
To keep the supercomputers from overheating. Santa is real.
I was going to go
with the
magic of the Christmas spirit, and then that happened. So
wow.
Thanks, Frank.
Santa science right there.
Yep, there
dropping
it is.
Some science on the podcast. Woo. So with that, let me ask you guys, do you think it is okay for people to tell the truth about Santa, that he is real?
No. I just did.
Right. Now, do you think it is okay for parents to lie to their kids about Santa, Tooth Fairy, Easter Bunny, all that kind of stuff? Is that all right?
I'll tell you, let me put it this way, Dave. We have to continue to perpetuate the truth of Santa for the same reason we have to vaccinate children. If you don't vaccinate a couple kids, they infect the rest of the kids.
Right.
So it's like talking about Santa and Easter Bunny and all this stuff is about vaccinations.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I think, you know, helping kids with their imagination, communicating to kids morals and values through stories and fantasy. And I do think there is a point, and I never want to take this away from parents, there is that point where you're helping your kids' kind of development by owning up to things that aren't true. But I also think that, you know, in my own personal life and parenting and belief system, I also cherish the concept and idea of having faith or believing in things that aren't necessarily seen or can be proven.
Yeah, no, I agree with what you're talking about. I do think maybe what you're kind of getting at a little bit, Dave, is how we really shouldn't try to be like bribing our kids with this notion of Santa to manage their behavior.
Like Elf on the Shelf type
right,
of stuff?
Yeah, because I think it's great in theory, but then it's kind of minimizing your role as a parent, like where it's like, oh, well, Santa's the one, you know, he's the one who's going to do this. And I think for some kids...
You know somebody who does that?
That's may weird. Be bad. You do Elf on a Shelf with your kids? What? No, I don't... No, but I think it's just to be mindful of that.
I've never known the elf or Santa to have more power than a parent. That's different.
That is different. Like
June. You better watch out. Santa's coming in 6 months.
So you don't feel like it's a problem to say, like, here are these things that are kind of fairy tales that we're passing off as true when you're a kid, and then we want you to believe us totally later. You think kids kind of get that. They don't. They just can roll with that.
Yeah, I think so. I think as somebody recently spoke about the tooth fairy and how they don't do that in their household because they don't want to teach their kids to sell their body parts for money. So it's like, you know, I think it's all about how you as a family go about discussing it. A lot of, you know, when the truth does come out, it's more or less what is your particular family's culture, some of the values that you have, and how do you continue the spirit, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's true. And that example, the tooth fairy example, is a great example of, you know, what I would say is a lot of times people can totally overthink this stuff and make it something that it's really not. And the same thing with Santa, with Easter Bunny. Kids understand that as they grow up, that this is a convention that parents use. It doesn't thwart their ability to trust their parents. It doesn't make them think that their parents are untrustworthy or liars or anything like that. So I think we can kind of land on that. All right, let's wrap this up with a final segment that we call
Doctor's Orders.
These are things in pop culture that we're personally enjoying. And Jonathan, do you have anything for us?
Well, this is a mixed bag, and I'm actually encouraging folks to watch this show and then let us know what you think. There is a Netflix series called Godless that dropped a couple weeks ago. It's a Western. I believe it's 8 episodes. And I went back and forth about how much I enjoyed this show and how well they stuck the landing. And I'd be curious to have other people watch it and let us know what they thought about it, because I really think I could be talked into either side of recommending it or not. And then the other thing I really want to recommend is the film Wonder. I had a chance to see it with my family. It is it's a delightful film. It's really great. I think it's well made. It's very charming, and I highly recommend it.
Frank.
It's been panned for a variety of reasons, but Battlefront 2 I've been playing quite a bit lately. And one of the things that I love, love, love about this game is the campaign, because it actually fills out the Star Wars universe in a way that I wasn't expecting. Because even the last mission I was playing, there is a massive Imperial fleet that shows up at Jakku. And so you get to see the final battle with all the ships crashing on that planet and the ship that Rey kind of crawled through. So that's just really, really neat.
And do you find out who Rey's parents are from the game?
No, there's a whole bunch of content that will be unlocked after the movie is released.
All right. Emma Kate.
I recently found a new Netflix series that I completely binge-watched, Mindhunter. I'm not sure if anyone else has seen this on the panel here, but it's a Netflix drama based on the true story of Holden Ford, who is an FBI agent who actually, he was the one who pioneered the science behind profiling serial killers. So it's a really great watch for those who are into crime and the psych part of behavior. So awesome show.
And I'm going to recommend a book that's actually 5 years old, but I highly recommend it. And I would in particular recommend the audiobook. It's called The Righteous Mind. The Righteous Mind by Jonathan Haidt. He is a psychologist and he studies moral psychology. And all the stuff we were talking about in the first segment about how people see things differently, why liberals and conservatives view the same issue through a different lens, how people make moral judgments. It's as if he's writing it for this year, but he wrote it probably 7 years ago. It came out 5 years ago. It's called The Righteous Mind. Absolutely a great book, a must read. I'd highly recommend it. All right, that's it for this edition of the Shrink Tank Podcast. You can check out shrinktank.com for articles and videos and all kinds of great stuff from all of our contributors. And follow us on Twitter @shrink_tank and like us on Facebook. Our producer and music composer is Sean Beck. For Emma Kate Wright, Jonathan Hederle, and Frank Gaskell in Charlotte, I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville. Tell all your friends about us and make it a great week.
Shrinktank.com.